Hello, I'm Russell Brooks. This is number 0193, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0193. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet once again Robert Hammond, the author of The Light, a mystical odyssey that blends fantasy, true crime, and fiction.
I would classify it as maybe inspirational fiction. Some people could call it addiction fiction, yeah, because it gets into the drugs, sex, rock and roll stories, you know, like Requiem for a Dream, Drugstore Cowboy, some of those kinds of junky stories. But the difference is it doesn't really stick with that. It gets into some actual fantasy, you know, it gets into fantasy, it gets into spirituality, and it kind of runs through the post-60s milieu, kind of the drug, sex, rock and roll, but all the religious cults and all the different spirituality that was going on.
Cleaning and environmental expert Vince Elliott, founder of the Chemical Free Cleaning Network, shares the dangers of bleach.
People look at how clean things appear, but they never consider the chemical residual that's left in the air or on surfaces. So here's some of the quick stats. Autism has increased 600% in the last 25 years. We've gone from 1 in 50 cancer rates to 1 in 2 for men. And now it's 1 in 3 for women. We dump 6 billion pounds of toxic chemicals in our waterways and streams every year. We injure 180,000 cleaning workers a year because of the chemicals they use.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, returns to share a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He's not crazy over the idea of the city introducing electric cabs.
If I were going to design a taxi for the city of New York, I would make sure that it came with a disability plan for the driver, a compensation plan for the driver, a health plan for the driver, life insurance for the driver, paid vacations for the driver, and a retirement fund for the driver, none of which cab drivers in New York City get. I think the concentration by Mr. Bloomberg, who has more money than he knows what to do with, should be on the social well-being of the cab driver and not some funky idea of an electric car, which is way ahead of its time and not ready yet.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0193, was writer Russell Brooks, author of 3, count them, 3 thrillers. There's Pandora's Succession, there's Chill Run, and there's Unsavory Delicacies. Thank you very much, Russell, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program. Much appreciated. The Stuff File Program is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Romanian lawyer Madeline Ceaușescu, age 34, said in April that the next stop for his lawsuit is the European Court of Human Rights. After 2 Romanian courts turned down his claim against Orthodox bishops who failed to exorcise the demons that were causing his flatulence. Yes, he sued the archdiocese because at least 2 exorcisms, one in his office and one at home, proved useless, thus harming his business as well as rendering his home life unpleasant. An archdiocese spokesman said the exorcisms were done properly by the book. Now, I don't want to state the obvious here, but I'm thinking one of 2 things may be at play here. One, maybe the exorcism didn't work because he was not a strong enough believer. And 2, perhaps he should first consider merely changing his diet. I mean, the devil might be just in the food he eats. That's all I'm saying. Okay, picture this. Speaking of food, you're hungry. The fridge is empty, plus you have a hankering for something more primal. So you go hunting for a squirrel with a BB gun, using a real bullet. Yeah, Police identified William Daniel Lloyd as the model of human ingenuity who decided that he would go to any lengths to bag a squirrel for his supper. Our intrepid marksman reportedly taped a .40 caliber cartridge to the end of a Pumpmaster 760 BB gun, went outside his home in Gainesville, Florida, and went a-hunting. When he fired the gun, a BB struck the cartridge's primer, causing it to explode. Shrapnel struck Lloyd in the arm and leg, and he was hospitalized with non-life-threatening injuries. There's no report on the squirrel's condition, but I'm assuming he's just fine. And wealthy Russians have recently found a way around the country's horrid traffic jams: fake ambulances outfitted with plush interiors for relaxation, while specially trained drivers use unauthorized lights and sirens to maneuver through cluttered streets. London's Daily Telegraph reported in March that ambulance companies charge the equivalent of about $200 an hour for these taxis. Now, while I would never condone this or consider doing it myself, you have to admire the ingenuity of it all, don't you? A witness called police to report a man riding recklessly on his motorcycle in West Valley City, Utah. Later, the same witness found the motorcycle lying in the road after the crash, but the rider was nowhere to be found. Officials searched the area but couldn't find the rider until he turned up at a gas station several miles away in the bed of a pickup truck. Troopers say the man was riding drunk on a stolen motorcycle when he rear-ended the truck. He was thrown into the back of the pickup, but the driver never noticed. Troopers suspect the driver may not have felt the low impact on his truck. The unnamed biker sustained serious injuries and was hospitalized. He faces charges of driving under the influence and driving a stolen vehicle. Now, why not charge him with leaving the scene of an accident? Officers decided it didn't count if he was unconscious. Got a point. And we have time for one more story before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. "What did I do?" demanded Trina Barron, age 27, of the Massachusetts State Trooper, after he had finally caught up with her and pulled her over near the town of Beverly. Trooper James Maloney, who said he was overwhelmed by the odor of alcoholic beverages that spewed out when Barron rolled down her window, informed her she had been driving the wrong way down the highway for at least 6 miles. One driver barely avoided a head-on collision, and multiple drivers called 911. "I've been telling her that for the last 10 minutes," her passenger said. When the trooper tried to explain the breathalyzer test he was about to give her, Barron replied, "I know how these tests work. I have one in my car." She was arrested and charged with third offense drunk driving, bypassing a vehicle's interlock device, driving the wrong way on the highway, and driving with a suspended registration. Yes, the trifecta. On the way to jail, she said the trooper was just a cop, but she said, quote, "I can be whatever I want to be," unquote. Once booked and given her classic one phone call, she called a friend to come bail her out and asked him to bring a 30-pack of beer. A 30-pack of beer. 3 days later, she showed up late for a court appearance, so the judge revoked her bail as a danger to the public. Barron pleaded guilty and was ordered to serve at least 18 months in jail, 5 years of probation with random alcohol tests, treatment for alcoholism, and her license will be suspended for 8 years. Well, she did say that she can be whatever she wants to be. Hopefully she'll decide that she now wants to be sober. There's a fresh new thought for her, huh? Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We had author Robert Hammond on the program a little over a month ago talking about Cecil B. DeMille. But this time, we have him back on the show to talk about something completely different. Robert is the author of The Light, which is a mystical odyssey that blends fantasy, true crime, and fiction. Robert is on the line with us once again from California. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, thanks for being back on. And again, as I said, this is something completely different. Tell us what The Light is all about.
You mentioned a little bit about it. As you said, kind of a mystical odyssey. It kind of combines some things. It's a novel, first of all. I would classify it as maybe inspirational fiction. Some people could call it but like addiction fiction, you know, because it gets into the drug, sex, rock and roll, you know, stories, you know, like some, you know, if you've seen like Requiem for a Dream, Drugstore Cowboy, some of those kinds of junkie stories. But the difference is it doesn't really stick with that. It gets into some actual fantasy, you know, gets into spirituality, and it kind of runs through the post 60s milieu, you know, of like the kind of the drug, sex, rock and roll, but all the religious cults and all the different spirituality that was going on, which I guess it still goes on now. But it's kind of a story that takes a broad landscape and really a spiritual journey, I guess you'd ultimately call it.
Now, in addition, because the last time we spoke to you, we talked about Cecil B. DeMille, we talked about screenwriting, we talked about that facet of the job that you do as well. You also teach screenwriting, correct?
I do, yes. I teach your graduate-level screenwriting at a couple of places, most recently Southern New Hampshire University. So I do that. I write screenplays, you know, I develop movies, you know, we talked about the DeMille, I've got a couple of books on that, Ready When You Are, and C.B. DeMille, The Man Who Invented Hollywood, and working on a movie about DeMille. Keeping me busy. But as you said, this is a very different project and a little bit different, I'll say a lot different, really, in its scope. You know, it's not like your big Hollywood production kind of a story. It's a novel, you know, which, I mean, some of these kind of stories do become movies. Like if anyone's seen, like a couple of ones I mentioned, like Requiem for a Dream or, with Darren Aronofsky directed, you know, very brilliantly, and other things that where they get into some really deep things. But again, it's hard to really compare it to that. So it's a novel, and that's really where I want to leave it at this stage, even though there's some talk of, you know, and I'm looking at the idea of adapting it into a screenplay, but it's not as easy. You know, a novel and a screenplay, they're just so totally different things. If you want to get into that topic, I can tell you a little bit about it, but it's another realm.
Well, the reason why I brought up a little bit about your background is to delve even further into your background, and that is writers will always say, or people will always say about writing, write what you know. So let's go a little bit into your background vis-a-vis this story.
Ah, okay, scary stuff now.
you have a very interesting career going for you right now, but you also have a bit of a checkered past, correct?
I do. Checkered is a very nice phrase, as opposed to chess, I guess. But the bottom line of it, and I'll just say real quickly, is I lived through what the novel's about, you know, the person going through like drugs, sex, rock and roll, you know, like I said, I grew up in the 60s, the 70s, and you know, early 80s, you know, like those drugs out there, and you know, obviously most people did not indulge in all that, or if they did, they didn't have major issues with them. You know, people still can indulge here and there in different things. I personally did get involved in a lot of that. And, you know, and suffer some consequences for it. And that's, I guess, you know, the good and the bad side of it. The good, I guess, is that those consequences, sometimes they do teach lessons, you know, sometimes, you know, they're hard learned and they're slowly learned. And so that's really what the story is about. You know, that's, you know, it's part of my story. And I was inspired, you know, like I said, even like people like Cecil B. DeMille, you know, who didn't, you know, go through that kind of lifestyle, but just the fact that he did do a lot of wrong things in his life. That's one of the reasons I wrote his story. You know, he's so inspirational to say that here, you know, he really conflicted with his values. You know, he really wanted to do biblical epics. You know, he wanted to live, you know, a valued, centered life, you know, and a spiritual life and a moral life, which I think we all do. I mean, ultimately, you know, we all have our own values. You know, it's not to say here everyone has to live this particular lifestyle or live and act a certain way. You know, but obviously there are rules and there's laws, and I was on outside of all of it. You know, I didn't live by any rules other than the ones I would make up as I went along. And like I said, I suffered the consequences, and I ended up, you know, going to jail and doing all those things that will end up happening to the average person if you just keep going down that path so far. That's what happened to me.
Yeah, but the average person that goes down that path, and that's one of the points I want to get to, because you know you've been in and out of jail, you've been to rehab, you've battled drug addiction. A lot of people don't learn that lesson, and even if they do learn that lesson, they don't come out successful on the other side. You've managed to do that.
Yeah, and that's I think one of the reasons why I did write this book, and actually one of the reasons why I decided to even to bring it out and to talk about it. is because I do know that a lot of people are out there, and we've all walked past people, you know, stepped over people and said, oh, this is, you know, hopeless, you know, dope addict or a drunk or an alcoholic or some mentally ill person, you know, out there on the streets, homeless, you know, these people that are in jail, you know, these criminals, you know, blah, blah, blah. We distance ourselves in general. However, you know, the reality is that all, you know, everybody is human. You know, there is a spark, and that's why I call it the book The Light. It is about, there's a light that shines within each one of us. You know, it's within you, and it's all around you. And what we often do, and most of us, I would say even people who don't, you know, get into drugs and, you know, the heavy levels of addiction like that, you know, do have some kinds of addictions or some types of things that are out of their control or some kind of idol that they place, you know, or there's something they're looking for outside of themselves. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a real addiction like drugs or gambling or you know, things like that. But it can just be, you know, a life that's out of balance, you know, where we're looking outside of ourselves. And that's part of what my story was, is I found what I thought I was looking for in, you know, the drugs, you know, the sex, the rock and roll, you know, the lifestyle, you know, chasing money and chasing women and, you know, just going, you know, all, you know, travel all over the world, basically, and just did a lot of crazy things. And, you know, you hear, you know, the stories in the news, like, you know, the celebrities, you know, that are out there, and, you know, we kind of feel sorry for them. Sometimes we make jokes about them. And then on the other extreme, you know, you see the people that are, you know, totally, you know, out there on the streets. But, you know, the reality is that all those people, that light, you know, is still there. You know, there's a light within all of us. And that's, the truth is you have to look within yourself to find it. And that's the hard lesson, is sometimes is just being still long enough. And that's, I think, kind of partially answering your question, is what happened is, you know, and it's like that, you know, the old saying, you know, seeing the light. I mean, and the truth is you're not going to see it until you really look where it actually is, which is within you.
Well, even though the novel The Light is a work of fiction, because it does have elements that touch on your background, was it cathartic for you to write this book?
It really, really was, actually, yeah. In fact, yeah, I wrote it many, you know, I've actually written several versions of this book. You know, this book actually has had several incarnations, just like my own life has. You know, I've had, you know, different incarnations, you know, and I'm not talking about reincarnation. I'm talking about, you know, within this lifetime, you know, as I jokingly say, I quit believing in reincarnation two lifetimes ago. But this book started really, actually, originally was a memoir. You know, that's a little... I almost hate saying it. When people read it, they're like, "You're kidding me!" you know, they look at the character, you know, and it's not saying that everything in there is my personal life, you know. I do recommend people reading the book, not just, you know, because I wrote it, you know, but I think, you know, if you look on Amazon, you look at, you know, The Light, Robert Hammond, you'll see the book, you'll see, you know, people who have been reading it. You know, it just came out, so I mean, you're really one. This is really the first real interview that I'm doing, you know, on the radio. You know, got. I just sent out review copies just literally today. You know, I just got them. So, I mean, you caught me right in the beginning of this whole process. So I'm hoping, you know, to get out and talk a little bit more about it. So this is a good start. And, you know, you're the guy that breaks the story about the book, you know, the light. And, you know, the idea that it is originally was a memoir, you know, originally when I first wrote it. And I, you know, had an agent, we were, you know, going to sell it that way. And just, you know, a lot of things have changed over the years, and you know, and I kept revising it, and slowly say, hey, I need to take some of these names of these people out of here that you're going to end up killing me if they think that this book's about them. You know, because I actually had their, you know, real names and real places in it, and so I had to change all that. And then eventually I changed it to from first person to third person, and then I fictionalized the main character, you know, which was a big change. And then just ultimately, like I said, over many, many years, and so it was a cathartic process, just really coming back and recalling some things in my own life, and then taking those real things and then turning them into fictionalized, you know, dramatizing them so that, you know, I didn't want to end up being like, remember the Million Little Pieces, James Frey, who was on Oprah years ago,
right?
A popular book on drugs.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wrote it as a memoir, but then later they say, oh, that's all fiction, you know, because he made up a lot of stuff. So I didn't really want to be in that position of saying, well, you know, your life, you know, can't be that crazy, you know. So I said, no, this is just works of fiction. And so I'm, you know, writing some true things that, you know, happened. They're based on true events. but it's not. I'm not saying that these are the exact ways that they happen, or these are the exact people and places, and everything is fictionalized. So,
well, the book is called The Light, and it's written by Robert Hammond, and it's an interesting trip, pun intended. I thank you very, very much, Robert, for taking the time to be on the program with us once again.
I do appreciate you too, Peter. Thank you so much.
Robert Hammond, author of The Light. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0193, and you'll find links to Robert's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
If you're listening to this while walking with your iPod, make sure you look both ways before you cross the street. It's safety first on The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the evils of bleach. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, will share a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. And lots more Stuff File news coming your way in just a matter of moments here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to. That aforementioned Stuff File news, it's right here, it's right now. 80-year-old Miriam Tucker, who was attending a charity event in Florida, accidentally swallowed a $5,000 diamond that she had just won. Organizers of the event placed cubic zirconia stones in the bottom of 399 of 400 champagne glasses. The prize diamond was placed in the last. And Tucker told local media that she didn't want to put her fingers in the glass to get the jewel. Instead, she took a few sips of champagne. As she was talking and laughing with other women at the table, she realized she swallowed the jewel. What a dumb thing, she said. Meanwhile, organizers and jewelers, Joy Pearson and Andy Mayer, were puzzled that no one came forward with the diamond. As they hovered near the table, Tucker eventually spoke up. She said she swallowed what was in her glass, Pearson said. Event chairwoman Gina Roth insisted that Tucker follow her to a hospital for an X-ray. The diamond didn't show up, but Tucker already had a colonoscopy scheduled. She told Dr. Bruce Edgerton what happened, and he retrieved the diamond, put it into a biohazard bag, and gave it to Tucker's daughter. After the procedure, they went to a jewelry store and had the diamond cleaned, tested, and verified. How would you like to be that jeweler, huh? Yeah. It's an amazing story, said Tucker. She plans to bequeath it to her 13-year-old granddaughter, where the diamond will stay in the family with a story to go with it. I don't know. I don't think that diamond would ever really be clean enough for me. And as for the 13-year-old who will eventually get it, now there's a conversation piece, huh? Oh, nice diamond. Where'd you get it? Inside Grandma. Yeah, that conversation kind of kills the mood, don't you think? Meanwhile, still with old folks, an elderly couple have been charged with harassment for playing Iron Maiden songs at top volume towards their neighbor's house. The couple was taking revenge on their new neighbors in the Stockholm area, who they say were just too loud. The 71-year-old woman, whose name was not reported, said the new neighbors were so loud she had to take sleeping pills in order to sleep. "We just wanted to give them a taste of their own medicine," her 81-year-old husband said. The couple set up a music system on their balcony facing their neighbor's home. The elderly couple allegedly played the music until as late as 4 a.m. throughout the winter. "The harassment was just going on and on and on. I am completely broken down. How can I keep living here?" the neighbors told police. "Okay, I know the harassment was wrong, but aren't you just slightly impressed that this senior couple even knew who Iron Maiden was?" Yeah. Los Angeles police said a burglary suspect was arrested after attempting to evade capture on a rooftop and seeming to take a nap. Police say they responded to the Venice neighborhood around 6 a.m. on Friday on a report of burglary, and the man, who was spotted leaving a house, fled to the top of a three-story apartment building. "He took off running," said Officer Mike Scott. "We set up the perimeter, and he ended up on a roof." Police spokesperson Richard French said the man repeatedly refused to come down and at one point was seen lying down on the roof with his shirt bunched up underneath his head as if taking a nap. The man was arrested by SWAT officers when he jumped onto a catwalk shortly after 9:30 a.m. There really is something wrong, by the way, with your fight or flight mechanism if you can take a nap in the middle of being chased by police. I mean, that's one cool cucumber. Don't you think? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest, a British supermarket chain announced it was pulling wholehearted roasted monkey nuts from shelves because they do not warn of their peanut contents. The Booth's chain, which has multiple locations in England, said it will remove any packages of the nuts that do not declare the presence of peanuts on their labels. In a statement, the company said Booth's is withdrawing some batches of its wholehearted roasted monkey nuts. I just love saying that. Because the presence of peanuts is not declared on the label. This makes the product unsuitable for anyone with an allergy to peanuts. Booth's takes the accurate labeling very seriously, particularly surrounding issues of allergen advice. Our technical manager, Wahid Hassan, alerted the Food Standards Agency about this labeling error immediately, as well as posting notices in all Booth stores. The FSA spokeswoman said the agency supports the move. "People who are allergic to peanuts may not be allergic to other types of nuts. Without the correct information on the packaging, people with an allergy to peanuts who might not know or make the connection between peanuts and monkey nuts, for example, children, might eat the product and experience an adverse reaction," she said. Wow. First of all, the reality is most children aren't label readers, let's be honest. But seriously, to the person who picks up something called wholehearted roasted monkey nuts, if you don't think it contains peanuts, I'm really afraid to ask what you think it contains. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. For many, the start of spring means cleaning, but before you pick up your bleach and other household cleaning products, think about what the consequences for your family and the environment are. While most people associate the smell of bleach with germ-free cleanliness, Vince Elliott says it's really the smell of death. Elliott is a cleaning and environmental expert, the founder of the Chemical-Free Cleaning Network, and the author of Your Home, Clean, Green, and Dangerous, and the Extreme Green Cleaning Book. He joined us on the line from Maryland. Hi, Vince.
Hi. I gotta stop drinking that bleach.
The idea that it's the smell of death. Wow, that's really saying it right there, isn't it?
You betcha. Yeah, there's a lot of scientific research out there. Things like bleach, you know, hypochlorous acid and hydrogen chloride. Absolutely are condemned by everybody who has it out there. But it works. I mean, you know, the reason we have all these chemicals is they work. But, you know, they kind of give you the results. People look at how clean things appear, but they never consider the chemical residual that's left in the air or on surfaces. So here's some of the quick stats. Autism has increased 600% in the last 25 years. We've gone from 1 in 50 cancer rates to 1 in 2 for men. You'll know people who will have cancer. That's going, and now it's 1 in 3 for women. We dump 6 billion pounds of toxic chemicals in our waterways and streams every year. We injure 180,000 cleaning workers a year because of the chemicals they use. And we send 20 million workers to the emergency rooms because how they're affected by chemicals used in their buildings. You know, we kill 6,000 people a year, which is where that issue comes from.
Okay, not that I want to be an advocate for bleach, because I certainly don't. But is part of the problem not the bleach itself, but how often or how we use it? I mean, in a lot of cases, isn't bleach supposed to be diluted, and maybe we're just using too much of the stuff?
No, I'm afraid so. I'm afraid that the real issue with bleach is that it just is the wrong kind of product to use. Bleach itself, when you kind of break bleach down, is a kind of product that will actually get into the vital organs of your body. A quick example is that how much time does it take before you contact with these toxic chemicals that you can measure it in your pancreas and liver and other internal organs? And the answer is 26 seconds. So you can't have a little bit. You know, it's like the EPA in the U.S. says, green chemicals are the thing, and people are rushing to green chemicals. But the science says green chemicals are 5 to 15 times less toxic than other stuff. But they also whisper on the sideline, oh, by the way, it's still toxic. So green isn't the answer. You've got to kind of get beyond green, and one of the least green things in the world is bleach. And by the way, there are products that are more powerful than bleach, disinfect faster and more effectively than bleach, and have no chemical residual or toxic effect. So there's a whole world of innovation now coming on the scene, first I've seen in 40 years of my experience, that allows you to step away from those kind of chemicals. I mean, sodium hydroxide is just dangerous to people. If you read any of the literature, there's something called material safety data sheets that's required in any commercial environment about bleach. And you have to put on gloves and goggles and no skin contact. It's toxic. So a little bit isn't really the issue. And taking it over time, which some people believe, if they only use it once or twice, it's fine. And the answer, well, it's not fine. There's some research, some coming out of Canada, that says that how small of exposure really affects your body. And the answer is one part per trillion will affect your body. Not a good product to use. And it's the same thing for ammonia. And same thing, here's an example. If people use air fresheners in your car or in your home, and they have the plug-in kind and the hanging kind, but air fresheners contain something called phthalates. It will affect not only your cancer, but your reproductive system. That is, the endocrine disruptors will actually mutate the eggs of women. So women either have stillbirths or ADHD children, or children born with autism, but it affects the reproductive system. 5 out of 6 products that you can smell are considered toxic.
Okay, so
you can smell it.
Okay, so obviously you want bleach out of the picture and some of these air fresheners out of the picture. What do you replace them with? What are the alternatives to the products that we normally use in some cases, a daily basis?
Well, actually, I think you could use things like vinegar. You could use steam cleaners. These steam machines are wonderfully excellent. There's an easy way to clean bacteria and
surfaces by using something called microfiber cloths. These are high-density cloths, 100 times more fine than human hair. And they are so fine and have such a grip that if you wipe them across the surface, with or without regular water, you literally can pick up bacteria from that surface and cleanse the surface. And you talk about the fact that it's spring. You know, we ought to do spring cleaning 4 to 6 times a year. Air out the house. Every study says indoor air quality is 5 to 100 times more toxic than outdoor quality because we use these chemicals, don't open the windows and doors, and it just builds up. So open the windows, open the doors, air the place out periodically. Get that dangerous stuff out of there. There's a great product that people use. I won't name the company, but they use it to spray the crib for their child to disinfect all that nasty bacteria and stuff and make the place safer. That product is called a pesticide. So if you're spraying things for your child's crib, you're spraying that crib with a pesticide.
Again, you mentioned the things that we should be using and obviously the things that we shouldn't be using. We have just a short period of time here. Is there a website that people can go to? I mean, they can also buy your books, I'm sure. But is there a website people can go to find out this information that is better for them than what we commonly have been using for the last several generations?
Absolutely. And I'm gonna kind of climb on the bandwagon with Al Gore, who said it's not pollution that's harming the environment. It's the impurities in our air and water that's doing it. So if we follow that line, then you can go to my website at www.cfcn, that's Charlie Frank Charlie Nancy, .info, and you'll get the full story on these products and the alternatives. I mean, there's something called electrolyzed water. You can supercharge plain tap water, and it's more powerful than bleach. Plain tap water.
Wow. And there are people who won't even drink tap water anymore. That's a whole other story.
if your tap water is burning, don't do this.
Okay. And again, we should mention your books. There's Your Home, Clean, Green, and Dangerous. And there's also...
That's a free download from the website. It's free for no money. And my book is Extreme Green Cleaning on Amazon.com.
Okay. So Your Home, Clean, Green, and Dangerous, people can download for free from your website. And the book they can purchase from Amazon, the Extreme Green Cleaning Book, correct?
Correcto.
Vince, I thank you very, very much for opening up our eyes and sharing some of this information with us. All I can say is happy cleaning.
Well, thank you. I just want to get my next dose of bleach here.
Okay, Vince. A cleaning and environment expert, Vince Elliott, founder of the Chemical Free Cleaning Network. Now, you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0193, and you'll find links to Vince's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In the movie It's a Wonderful Life, there's a scene where Jimmy Stewart's character gets thrown out of the bar. It's what has happened to unruly bar patrons for decades, but it may soon become as much a part of nostalgia as that movie. Here's why. 4 years ago, a guy at a bowling alley in Iowa began taunting another guy. A bartender told the aggressive guy to knock it off, but when the taunting continued, the bartender kicked him out. Later, the guy who was being taunted left the place and started a fight with the guy who had been kicked out. The guy who did the taunting got hurt, and, as you might guess, he sued the bowling alley. His lawyer argued that the bowling alley should have called the police on his own client. And amazingly, the Iowa Supreme Court recently agreed. Let's be fair. This matters to those of us who don't get into fights because it could force the places we visit to ramp up security. And that will cost all of us. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, we wing our way to New York City once again. It is indeed Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, live from the streets of New York.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Now, I'm sure you've heard the term silent but deadly, right?
Yes.
Yeah. This has me concerned because I have a feeling that's what the new New York City cabs will be if they go electric.
Well, I don't know that they're going to be deadly unless I guess you stick your finger in the socket and get a shocking experience. But it's much ado about nothing. See, I have to explain. My philosophy about cabs is cabs, you get in, you pay, you get out. That's the end of it. There's no relationship. There's no lasting bond. There's no great philosophical meaning. There shouldn't be any technology. You don't need to have credit card acceptance. You know, pay it in cash. Who doesn't have $6, $7 in cash? You don't need television in the backseat. And you don't need an electric car that has to be recharged and is going to take 90 minutes to do it when you have, at least today, perfectly good technology and cabs that don't really pollute that much. So what's the big deal, and why is New York City now going to attempt to switch over to electric cabs?
Okay, and for those who aren't familiar with the story, the city has added 6 Nissan Leaf electric cars to its official taxi fleet for a year-long pilot program. Now, I've seen video of these cars. First of all, they seem kind of small for New York cabs.
Yeah, well, they are small because the electric car doesn't have the great power that a gas-driven vehicle does. And contrary to popular belief and the environmentalists, the cars really don't pollute that much. That's not what's killing us. What's killing us is the American food industry that's filling us up with sugar, not the oil and gas industry.
So as I said, it's a year-long pilot program. Do you think there will be a time when there will be, because there's what, right now 13,000 taxis in New York City?
Yeah, but I mean, even there too, in terms of pollution, each day a million cars come into New York City. So we have 13,000. It's a drop in the bucket. And even if you switched every cab over to electric, it's still a drop in the bucket. It's really not going to make that much difference. It's an unnecessary extra expense. And I'd like to point out to your nice listeners that the 6 cars were given to the city by the car company for nothing, which I think happens to be a very dangerous thing. And it happens to be a very dangerous thing is because I'm predicting that the maintenance, the expense, and everything that goes along with these things is going to be absolutely horrible. And people will say about 6 months from now, wow, if it couldn't make it as a New York City cab, I'm sure not going to buy one as a regular car. So they're being cute. They're being very clever by giving the 6 to the city of New York. But if they would have asked me, I would have said, what, are you crazy?
Now, I know your mayor, Michael Bloomberg, says he wants to see 1 out of every 3 cabs in New York City be fully electric by the end of the decade. Do you think that's actually possible?
It's possible, but it's going to be done on the, you know, the backs of the cab drivers because they're going to be losing the time. You see, it's not like you're going to take it home, plug in your electric razor type of thing, go to sleep, and that's it. This thing has to be charged on somebody's shift. So that's 90 minutes right off the top. If I were going to design a taxi for the city of New York, I would make sure that it came with a disability plan for the driver, a compensation plan for the driver, a health plan for the driver, life insurance for the driver, paid vacations for the driver, and a retirement fund for the driver, none of which cab drivers in New York City get. That's how a New York City cab driver works. So I think the concentration by Mr. Bloomberg, who has more money than he knows what to do with, should be on the social well-being of the cab driver and not some funky idea of an electric car, which is way ahead of its time and not ready yet.
On to other things, sir. There was the bombing that took place at the Boston Marathon. Of course, with all the coverage, it was shades and remembrance of what took place in 9/11, although not as, of course, on such a big scale as 9/11 was. But it brought back some of the feelings and sentiments that took place also many years ago. What was it like the week after, well, the day of and the week after the bombing for people living and remembering in New York City? Did it have an effect, either with security or just the way people felt or the mood?
Well, it depends on what your, you know, your attitude is towards, to some extent, towards the FBI. For me, it was quite easy. I blame the FBI in Boston for this event, just like I blame them for 9/11. Okay, in the sense that if they had been doing their jobs and keeping their finger on the pulse of the city and having people infiltrate groups and do the things they should have done, then it probably wouldn't have happened. And by the way, there's another little side story to all of this that I find very curious. These two brothers had three friends who were drug dealers. And several years ago, their three friends were found dead in an apartment with their throats slashed. And when the funerals took place of their three friends, the two brothers didn't even bother to go. Do you think it's a possibility that maybe the brothers had something to do with that?
We don't know. We don't know. That's just speculation.
Yes, and they're easy for me to speculate because I doubt that either one of them is going to sue me.
That is true. That is true. On to a few other things that are in the news, and some of the things I found from your website, which is www.gabby.com. The whole situation about shark fin soup, this is now a big deal?
Well, it is because, you know, New York City has a huge Chinese community, probably the largest Chinese city in the world that's not in a Chinese country, so to speak. And because of that, there's a huge amount of shark fin soup consumed in our Chinatown. Well, you know, some people are beginning to worry about the shark, which has been made into some kind of evil monster that stalks after you. My own personal theory is that you happen to be unlucky and the shark bumps into you. I don't think that it's actually out there waiting for some delicious, you know, person to get into the ocean so they can gobble them up. I think they get a bad rap in the movies just like snakes do. But in any event, there is now the beginnings of a public outcry to make it illegal to serve shark fin soup in New York City. I don't particularly really care that much, except I think it's about time that people should stop picking on sharks. And as a matter of fact, I'd like to announce at this time that I'm forming a committee to raise money for the preservation of sharks. And each one of your listeners can send me a donation if they like.
Okay, I'll make sure they know where to send that. And I also understand. Okay, so let me see if I can tick these things off. According to the mayor, shark fin soup out, large soft drinks out, smoking indoors out, a lot of things that are out. Oh, there's one other thing. Street performers.
Well, he doesn't want them out, but what he's doing in that situation is right now one of the charming things about New York City and just about every place in the world where it happens is somebody sets up on a corner, starts doing a dance, starts playing his violin, starts playing his guitar. He puts his hat on the sidewalk. You people walking by throw a few bucks into it, and everybody lives happily ever after, keeping the streets of your particular city alive and happy and well. What he wants them to do is now to perform only in certain designated spots. So they will have to only go to a certain spot, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, if the street person is creating a traffic hazard or blocking pedestrians or being annoying or doing something, well, then you stop him or her from doing what they're doing. But to make a blanket law in which there's only certain place where you can play music is just absolutely crazy. I remember once when I was speaking to Beethoven, he said he was trying very, very hard to practice his music, but every time he started to practice his music, someone told him, move along, move along, move along. So he said he wasn't able to finish a lot of symphonies that he had been working on.
And finally, sir, I understand you have a celebrity sighting of the day. You saw Tom Hanks?
Yeah, well, he's appearing in a play in New York City, and I saw him outside the theater that he's performing in. And it's a show which I just absolutely do not understand. It's the life story of a guy named Mike McElroy, who was a writer for a newspaper here in New York City, and I just I mean, I never was a great fan of his as a writer, but I don't understand the play. But be that as that may, Hanks was there, and he looked like Tom Hanks.
Now, was he alone, or was he with his wife, Rita Wilson?
No, he was just alone by himself. And as usual, what happens is that I always get the feeling I'm the only person in the crowd who seems to notice the person, because celebrities just so blend in so unbelievably in New York that it's hard to recognize them. Nobody ever recognizes me, which is, of course, very upsetting.
Because, you know, while he was on his first week in Broadway, his wife was performing at 54 Below at 54th and 8th. She was performing.
You are just a wealth of minutia.
She was performing her album, which is called AMFM.
Yeah, and what was the color of her toenail polish?
Oh, she didn't have open-toed shoes.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Peter, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. People can find you by going to your website at gabby.com. They can send you an email to peter@gabby.com. Thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming up in just a matter of moments. But before I get to that, I have one more Stuff File story to share with you. Corey Moore, a Washington, D.C. street legend, according to the Washington Post, for beating one arrest after another on murder and firearm charges, was finally convicted in February and faces at least 15 years behind bars. The case was broken by a foot patrolman in the suburb of Tacoma Park, Maryland, who saw Moore toss an open bottle of beer into some shrubbery. After a sidewalk chase, a search yielded cocaine, which enabled a search of Moore's apartment that supplied crucial evidence the police had been lacking for years. Okay, now I almost made this guy the idiot of the day, but I didn't, because, let's face it, he was smart enough to elude the justice system for years. So let's just be thankful that he literally can't hold his liquor. Okay? So he's not the idiot of the day. But. This is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
In February, husband Jared Rick and his wife Ashley walked out of a Walmart in Salem, Illinois, because, as you know, on this program, everything happens at Walmart. They walked out with about $2,400 in shoplifted merchandise. Apparently, they got away with it scot-free. But in the parking lot, they got into a loud domestic argument that drew the attention of security guards who saw the merchandise and matched the Ricks with surveillance video. Now, why, oh why, would you go to all the effort to stealthily steal $2,400 worth of merchandise from a Walmart, no less, only to draw attention to yourself by getting into an argument before you even leave the parking lot? Oh man, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0193. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, it's 0193. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and you can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You
You've been listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.